Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm EQMM's editor, Janet Hutchins. Our featured story this month is by award-winning short story writer and editor, Tara Laskowski, who becomes a published novelist next month when her thriller One Night Gone hits bookstores. The book has already received a starred review from Publishers Weekly, which called it an evocative and beautifully crafted tale of suspense. Same thing could be said of the story of hers from our July-August 2019 issue. Here is Tara Laskowski reading her story, The Long-Term Tenant.
The police came on a Tuesday afternoon in the dead middle of the New Mexico summer. Raleigh was at the Jubilee, so it was just May in the front office of the Kiwa Come and Stay Inn, swatting flies with a AAA brochure and cracking pistachios in front of the rotating floor fan. When she heard Lee's name, the hair on the back of May's neck fanned, and she felt a trickle like a daddy long legs falling down her spine. "Yes," she said. "Yes, room 312, in the back." They wanted to know if he was there. Could they see the room, please? Was that possible? There were two of them. One, a skinny white boy with fuzz for a mustache and fidgety, so fidgety he made her nervous, and the other, a rounded Mexican, hefty like a sack of ground maize, his stubble gray and white on the shelf of his chin. They were polite, but there was a tension in the air, snapping around in between the bursts of radio static on the thin one's walkie-talkie. "Well, my husband," she trailed off. Her husband what exactly? Hadn't Raleigh put her in charge while he was at the Jubilee? And if he didn't like it, well, she could make her own decisions. She gripped the safe's dial lock in her small hand and twirled it with precision, wondering if the cops were impressed. She could unlock it in the dark if she had to. Inside, the skeleton key hung from a ribbon on the door, and she plucked it out, clasping its cool weight in her palm. Raleigh wasn't a big believer in modernizing, and when the salesman from Phoenix had dropped in to talk about digital swipe card locks, Raleigh had been polite, even slightly eager about it, until he'd seen the cost. May didn't mind, though. She liked the sound of a real key turning in a lock. The two cops immediately went to work when they stepped inside 312. With an intense, destructive focus, they spilled things out of drawers and pulled back sheets. The skinny one rolled the corners of the floor rug, and May hoped he wouldn't find any cockroaches. They flipped through the couple of magazines and paperbacks that Lee had stacked on his nightstand. The big cop took his time, thrusting his thick fingers inside each pocket of pants. She could tell they wished she would leave, but May stayed, watched every move, trying to hide her nerves. "Please, you can't just destroy the place." They ignored her, though at least now she could tell Raleigh she tried. The rooms weren't big or fancy, but May liked to think they were comfortable. Most of them featured two queen beds, a small kitchenette, and a bathroom with a tub and a shower. May moved into the kitchen area and leaned against the counter in front of the ceramic canisters. In the amber light streaming through the dirt-crusted window, something metal glinted on the nightstand. Lee's lighter. She remembered its bright glow in the darkness, the way he'd flicked it casually with his thick thumb. Her body felt like a balloon. "You all right, ma'am?" the big one asked, bagging a gold chain she'd seen Lee wear sometimes. "Fine," she said, trying to get her voice back. She wiped her hands on her shirt and tried again. "Can I ask what this is about?" "It's important you tell us anything you know. He's been staying here for how long?" May squinted, making it look like she was thinking hard. "Maybe a month or so?" It was 33 days, exactly.
"And when was the last time you saw him?"
"Goodness, I don't know. We don't keep tabs on our guests." She shifted in her sandals and looked down at them,
ashamed of their cheapness, the flat, unyielding soles and cheap leather straps already frayed at the edges. She'd been wearing the same shoes the last time she'd seen Lee, the Wednesday before. He'd been pulling away in his long blue car, a relic from another decade. She thought maybe he'd gone out for lunch, and she'd foolishly not eaten for 2 hours, hoping he might bring her something back from the diner or the fancy sandwich place in town. "Did he do something?" she asked the officers. She wanted to sit. She heard the skinny one sigh behind her. "What kind of tenant was he?" She drew a deep breath. "He seemed fine. Kept to himself, paid his bills, no trouble."
"Did he have women here?"
"No!" She rushed. "A mistake." The skinny officer raised an eyebrow at the stocky one, but before either of them could say anything, there was a noise at the door. The big cop's hand moved toward his gun. Then sunlight filled the dusty room, and Raleigh, red-cheeked and nervous, squinted in the doorway like a badger. May saw his nose twitch. He focused on her and narrowed his eyes suspiciously.
"What's the matter here?"
He pushed in, coming over to May, his hand heavy on her shoulder. She could feel his anger, hot as the alcohol on his breath. She wondered how much of their money he'd lost today. The big officer relaxed a little. Slowly, his hand moved from his holster.
"Conducting an investigation, sir." "Do you have a warrant?" "Your wife let us in," the skinny one said.
Raleigh glared at May, that impatient look he had whenever he found out she forgot to change the air filters or get his favorite beef jerky at the store. "It's okay," she said. It's important." She faltered, angry at herself for not asking them anything about it, making it a tiny bit harder for them. Raleigh had a right to be angry. The bigger officer pushed past her and Raleigh. She watched with dread as he manhandled the canisters she'd purchased, delicate ceramic containers she'd ordered in bulk from Walmart for all the rooms to give them a domestic touch. He opened each one, and when he got to the biggest, she held her breath. But he merely dipped his finger in, shaking his head.
"Flour,"
he said with disgust, and pushed the canister back, where it clanged against the backsplash. May allowed herself a curling, secretive smile, and she exhaled slowly. The officers finally told them. Lee was suspected of killing a girl, a young girl, barely legal, strangled her, then shot her for good measure and left her on the side of the road like a squirrel. After that, Raleigh changed his tune. Now it was all, "Whatever you need, officers," and "We'll cooperate, of course, if we can help in any way." He was all ready to wash his hands of that, of any sniff of a scandal. Just wanted to throw Lee in jail and lock the key, even though he wouldn't have been able to pick him up out of a lineup. May knew she'd be able to pick Lee out of a sea of men, identify his swagger within 2 seconds on a crowded street, even halfway across the world. She'd pick up the cedar oil scent of his neck, that rough, snagged way he said, "Darling." Once the cops left, May threw up all the pistachios in the toilet. She wasn't stupid. She'd known he was trouble, but it hadn't mattered. She'd lost her head, is what it was. "Take me with you," she'd said one night, arms draping over his chest, the desperate pleading in her own voice making her cringe, and his slow laugh as he lifted her off him like she was a tiny cat, and opened the blinds to let the harsh sun back inside. "I am nothing but trouble, darling." They'd slept together 8 times. It was always during the day, an hour here and there in the afternoon, when the front desk was slowest, and she could be, in theory, cleaning some of the vacant rooms. It was Raleigh's fault for never bothering to hire a new girl once Beth had gone
and had her baby. And if Raleigh hadn't gone to see his best friend up in Taos, well, then May wouldn't have been able to spend that one whole weekend with Lee, basically moving in to room 312. A time she'd wanted to place on an old Xerox machine in the back office and replicate over and over and over again until it stretched out into a lifetime. But now what? Had everything she'd thought was true just been another lie? Was Lee just another monster, exposed now to the light? And this is what gave May the shivers. If he was, did she care? A fool, May thought. A fool never wins. The next day was another scorcher. Not a cloud in the sky. 110 degrees by noon and climbing. May sorted the mail and delivered the laundry to the few tenants who'd requested it, trying not to look out to the highway for Lee's big blue car each time she left a room to enter another. Raleigh had wanted to clean up room 312, change the lock, get it ready for someone else, but May had pointed out that Lee, Mr. Chadwick, had paid through to the end of the month, so the room stayed as it was, a loud buzzing alarm clock May tried in vain to ignore. Behind the building, the geckos lounged in the parking lot. The only sign that they were alive was their bellies moving in and out. It was all hot black tar and bits of gravel and glass, everything sharp and reflective and harsh. May had wanted to put a playground in, dig up some of that gigantic expanse of pavement, and plant some grass, install a swing set that would fill with squealing, happy kids. But Raleigh said, priorities were priorities, and people would rather we fix the air conditioning units than build a sliding board. Besides, we aren't running a school here. May kept her mouth shut, but she knew what Raleigh's priorities were. Over the past year, he had spent most of his time helping his cousin manage a new hotel over in Albuquerque, which really meant he spent the day at the casino, pressing buttons and sucking their savings account dry. May took over most of the managing of the inn, and she knew she should be proud that she managed it all on her own, but she couldn't help but feel like she had given him permission to spend time with a brick-and-mortar mistress. The Albuquerque scene was for tourists, short-term visitors coming to see the hot air balloons or ride the tramway, loud laughing young people with colorful shirts and new cowboy boots that gave them blisters. Raleigh liked the excitement, the buzz, being close to the city. He wanted to sell the inn and move, said it depressed him to be around deadbeats and losers with nowhere else to go. But May didn't see it that way. She saw it as giving people a new opportunity, giving them a place to call home when home goes away. Kiwa was a small town, not too far from Albuquerque to be considered a suburb, but still close enough that it attracted people who wanted to take it easy but still have access to the big things. May and Raleigh provided a transition, a bit of stability in an otherwise chaotic world. They helped single mothers and divorced dads, veterans and food servers, widows and ex-cons. Sometimes people sent her letters, thank yous, with pictures of their kids all grown up, or a wedding photo from a fresh start and a new love. Sometimes they slipped in and slipped out without so much as a hello or a nod across the parking lot, and that was okay too. She didn't understand the need for privacy. She herself desperately needed to be seen, but she accepted it. Then Lee saw her. She'd be lying if she said she hadn't known he was dangerous. There were signs, of course, little things. And men like him didn't stay at the Kiwa come and stay in without troubles, without a pass they were running from. Perhaps that was part of what attracted her, she was being honest. The thrill of standing so close to someone who was about to blow up, who could catch fire at any moment if she rubbed against him the wrong way. The girl's murder made the front page in color, her long brown hair framing a round face with innocent green eyes. Pamela Ann Orchez, just 19 years old, a freshman at Central New Mexico Community College, a volunteer at the YMCA, one of the ones that had everything going for her, until. The article said that the police were investigating several leads, and May fixated on that word, several. So Lee wasn't the only one, she thought. And in parentheses inside her brain, she whispered eagerly, maybe he didn't do it. Maybe he isn't what they think. But when Raleigh read it, he shook his head in disgust, took a big swig of his Folgers, and looked up at his hunting rifle on the wall. That guy sets one toe on this property again, and I'll have his head. He eyed May over the top of the newspaper, staring at her until she nodded in agreement. His head, May. Don't you forget it. Here's what May wouldn't forget. One afternoon, Lee had taken her to the shooting range over in the warehouse district. He drove too fast on curvy roads, blazing past massive trucks, their brake pads burning with the smell of tar. All of the buildings were massive, hulking spaces. A furniture storage and delivery place, a children's trampoline park, a showroom for above-ground swimming pools. She was nervous the whole drive there, imagining that someone would call Raleigh to complain that the front desk was closed. But that didn't happen. No one cared where she was. Inside, a man stood behind a long, L-shaped glass counter. The handguns inside were propped on velvet heels, as if they were diamond necklaces. The man smiled, his eyes flicking over May, like he thought he knew her type. How can I help you today? He directed his question at Lee. We just want some time at the range. The man's smile got even bigger. Well, usually when I see couples in here for the first time, it's either because they've been burglared or because they want to make sure they'll never get burglared. He stopped grinning at them, am I right? Lee said tightly, how much is it for 30 minutes? In the range, with thick padded headphones on, May felt very out of place. A man a few yards down from them wore camouflage, sprawled on the ground like a sniper. The gun Lee handed her was heavy in her hand. She felt a surge of power she'd never felt before. In front of them, the target hung from what looked like a clothesline. It was shaped like a vague silhouette of a person. May suddenly felt nervous. She wanted to impress Lee. She wanted to be good at this, to not show fear. Lee rubbed his hands along her thin yellow blouse, which was much too nice now, she realized, for such a place. He nodded at her. Don't worry, you'll be fine. The trick is to distance yourself from the subject. Always think of them as silhouettes, like this. Then, if you ever have to hit someone for real, you'll be prepared. She closed one eye, pressed the cold metal trigger back with her finger. Bang! The shot was loud, even with her ears covered. The gun kicked back in her hands the way her aunt's horse had jerked from under his reins during a thunderstorm. She squinted at the target, but Lee spoke before she spotted it. Hot damn, girl, you've got good aim. And then she saw the tiny hole, right in the middle of the three gray ovals. Lee's eyes glittered. He kissed her. She felt her knees give out, felt the headphones sliding from her ears, but his arms were surprisingly strong, crushing around her. With just a little more force, he probably could have broken her ribs. 2 days after the cops had come, May finally gave into her urge. She waited until Raleigh went off to the casino, made sure that the handful of tenants on the back side of the building weren't peering out of their windows or smoking in the parking lot,
and used the skeleton key to get into Lee's room. It was still like the officers had left it, in chaos. May lifted the mattress and slid it back onto the box spring, tucking the sheets along the edges. She lay down in the middle of the bed, spreading out, staring up at the ceiling. It was hot without the air conditioning running, hard to breathe. May rolled on her side, pressed her face into his sheets to find his scent. There it was. She closed her eyes. Could she pretend he was still there, pacing back and forth in front of the bed, shirtless, his jeans unbuttoned? She liked the cool, certain way he'd moved, a man with purpose and confidence. He was restless. So was she. They matched, like salt and pepper shakers. She sat up, her eyes focusing on the canisters in the kitchen, remembering the time she and Lee had been in the kitchenette, slicing salami and eating it off the knife, when she'd seen him slip something into one of the canisters. Those silly, cheap things, painted with yellow and blue flowers. None of the tenants ever really used them, of course, but May had liked the way they'd added a note of cheerfulness to the rooms. "Is that your secret hiding place?" she'd asked, teasing, her lips still swollen from his kisses. She'd sauntered over, lifted the lid, mostly curious because she herself used her flower container for her secrets. She thought about telling him that, in a fit of pleasure, how she took a few dollars here and there from the safe in the lobby when Raleigh wasn't around, kept it all in a Ziploc bag buried in the flower. She had $7,650 in it, just in case. Her getaway money. She'd been so into her thoughts that the sudden, violent slamming of the lid on her fingers had hurt even more than it should have. Lee's face was red and hard, his hands shoving her back. "Get out of there!" Even now, in the bed alone, May squirmed with the uncomfortable memory of it. Later, he'd apologized to her. They'd even joked that he needed to find a better hiding place, but it had felt like a blemish in an otherwise clear photo, a stain on a brand new carpet. May thought again about Pamela Orchez, barely old enough to vote. Had she seen that hardened face, those flashing eyes, just before she'd died? May got up, moved into the kitchen. Lee wasn't there now to slam her fingers, but even so, she felt fear as she opened the lid of the canister. Lee had been smarter than she'd thought, filling it with flour. He'd learned something from her after all. The cops had overlooked it, hadn't they? She was used to it, of course, how easily men dismissed those domestic things, but she couldn't help but feel triumphant just the same. She dumped the flour into the sink. A tightly wrapped package fell heavily into the basin, and May carefully opened it. She was smart enough to wrap a dish towel around her hand before pulling out the tiny gun. A sleeker version than the one she'd used at the shooting range. She rotated it in her hand. "He must have been in trouble then," she thought, "to leave this behind." And then she saw what else was in the canister. A small black silk bag. The contents glittered across her palm, catching the dirty sun streaming through the window. "Oh," May breathed in. "Oh." The gun's bulky heaviness, tucked in the pocket of May's long skirt, pressed against her upper thigh like a warm hand. She had a newfound power, and it made her almost giddy, lightheaded, as she locked Lee's door and started back to the office. She remembered something her mother had told her many years ago, about a woman she'd worked with at the flower shop who always carried a pistol in her pocketbook. "Carolina," she'd said. She named her gun Carolina. May's mother had thought that was so strange, but it made perfect sense to May. When an object took on such importance, it made sense to name it. In naming it, you give it life. Mrs. Turney, I'm so glad I found you here. The officer swiveled out from behind one of the concrete pillars, smiling at her, breaking her thoughts. He was the bigger, round one. The skinny one's boss, May thought. The one in charge. You startled me, officer.
Did I? I apologize.
He didn't look sorry.
I see you were coming out of Mr. Chadwick's room, then.
Yes, she thought. And you missed it. You missed it all. May could see herself in the reflection of his sunglasses. Normally, she would have felt unnerved by this, her eyes flicking around like the bat that had gotten caught in the laundry room last winter. But now, with her secret hidden in the folds of her skirt, she was calm. The girl flashed in her head then, that photo from the newspaper of those glittery green eyes. Pamela, she thought suddenly. I'll name her Pamela.
Yes, well, officer, you did leave it a mess. We'll need to do a lot to get it ready for a new tenant.
Of course. He reminded her of the detective in that old crime show that Raleigh liked to watch in reruns late at night. The one who prowled around asking just one more question. A Mexican Columbo. She shifted, and the gun in her pocket pressed against her thigh like a warning. Pamela, whispering to May, just play it cool.
Any leads in your investigation?
He slid off his sunglasses and squirmed. Well, we're checking DNA now for a match. I'm pretty confident, though. And here again, May thought of the newspaper article, that word several, and she felt her stomach flip with uncertainty.
It's just a matter now of finding him, which is why people like you can be so crucial.
She nodded. Sure, if I remember anything at all.
There's a chance he might come back here. You never know. If he does, I want you to call me immediately. He could be very dangerous.
Certainly, I will.
He shook his head. You never get used to it, I tell you. The violence. We're dealing with the president of Sickos R Us here, Mrs. Tierney. I don't want to scare you, but be careful.
The violence?
Well, I mean, I don't want to shock you, but... He took a deep breath, lowered his voice.
One of her eyes popped out of her socket. That's how hard she was beaten. We're dealing with a man with a temper. So don't try to approach him. No matter how, friendly he might have been with you in the past.
She nodded, feeling Pamela brush against her again.
I understand, officer.
Back in the front office, May pulled Pamela out of her pocket and wiped her clean with a microfiber cloth. As she worked, she thought about what her mother had told her about men. They're all good for one thing, and no, I don't mean that. I mean, you can learn one thing from a man, and once you've learned that, it's time to move on. Perhaps her mama had just been jaded after her own husband ran off with another woman, or perhaps she, too, had just been underestimated her whole life, overlooked. May picked up the gun and pointed it at the front door that Raleigh would be walking through whenever he stumbled in. She felt a tingle run through her, a twitch of excitement, imagining the feel of the desert air through an open car window, blazing down the highway, living petty crime to petty crime. She could be Bonnie to someone's Clyde. Just give me a chance. She remembered the feel of Lee's hips against her back. As she steadied her aim, whispered instructions in her ear, the one thing he'd taught her. May lowered her gun, sighed. She put Pamela back in her skirt pocket. Now, Lee had been good for more than teaching her how to shoot a gun. He'd lit a fuse inside her, a slow burn that she could feel creeping up into her belly, propelling her into action. It was time to do something about it. When Raleigh came in, whistling, peeling off his sunglasses, May was ready for him. She could smell the cheap booze burning off of him. The way he was leaning, she could tell he shouldn't have been driving. Not all the way from Albuquerque. Not even down the block.
What did you do with the money, Raleigh?
He squinted, stopping mid-whistle.
What money?
She moved aside, gestured toward the open safe.
It's gone. All of it.
His face shaped into something like alarm.
What do you mean, gone? Where'd it go?
That's what I'm asking you. He shoved her aside, swung open the heavy door as far as it would go, and stuck his head inside. She had the urge to slam it on his neck.
How much is gone?
His voice was muffled. He withdrew his head and squinted up at her. She shrugged. 3,000, 4,000? It was $3,220, exactly. So much that she'd have to start using the sugar canister in their kitchen.
Someone stole it?
His eyes narrowed on her.
Where were you? How could you let this happen?
She knew he would blame her, but it didn't prevent her from getting angry anyway. Cleaning the rooms, Raleigh? Running the errands? Taking care of the people? You know, our job.
And you left the safe unlocked?
He slammed his fist down hard, scattering the contents of the desk. A woman, buying a Coke from the vending machine down the hall, turned, looked over at them, then away. Everyone here knew to mind their own business. It was a house rule, but still.
We need to call the police, he said.
Why would we do that when you took it? She asked evenly, moving toward him.
Me?
His eyes raised with effort.
What the hell are you talking about?
I know what you do, Raleigh. I'm not stupid. He raised a hand as if to slap her, then lowered it. May barely flinched.
Don't you dare tell me what to do with my money.
Our money, Raleigh. My money. I'm done with you. Done. Raleigh backed up a bit, but his face was set now in that stubborn way he had.
Oh, yeah? And what does that mean exactly? You're going to leave?
She raised her chin.
Maybe.
He laughed.
Go ahead, try it. I'd like to see you try.
She wanted to fly at him, pummel him with her fists. Raleigh wasn't a violent man, but he was vengeful. If she left him, he would never forgive her. He'd piss away all their money just so she had nothing.
I hate you, she said, each word like a bullet toward him. Hate you. Hate me all you want. I know what really happened to that money.
His face was shining with sweat.
Did you give it to your boyfriend? The murderer?
May's face drained of color. Raleigh laughed low, advancing toward her now, sensing his opening.
Oh, so that's it, huh? You don't think I know? You think I'm stupid?
His eyes narrowed. He whispered,
you whore.
You leave me, you'll regret it. Every moment for the rest of your life. He grabbed a dust towel from the desk and threw it at her. I'm going out. Make sure this place is cleaned up before you go to bed. She cried outside behind the office, sitting on the pavement with the geckos. The sun was low in the sky, but still searing, and the hot pavement burned through her skirt. Pain gave her focus, purpose. She thought for a very long time, making a plan. She'd been a fool, with all of it, but no more. She wiped her eyes, pulled out her phone. Before she could lose her nerve, she texted Lee. I have what you want. I found it. Saved it for you. Come back for me. Tomorrow. I'll be waiting in your place after R goes to bed. She waited, her breath shallow, a sharp pain building in her lower stomach. After a few minutes, she saw the dots appear that showed he was typing something in response. They disappeared, then came back. Finally, they stopped. Pamela, the real Pamela, gestured for May beside the brush just off the side of the road. Fear glittered in her green eyes, reflecting like a cat's.
Come, come, you'll die, you'll die!
But May was rooted there on the side of the road, blinded by the headlights of Lee's car. She felt Lee's anger radiating from inside the car, even though she couldn't see him. Something bad was going to happen, but she didn't know what. Pamela was getting further away, running, streaks of blood trailing off of her like sweat. Above May, thunder clapped. A gigantic streak of lightning tumbled through the sky, right towards May's heart. Then she was on the road. Tiny rocks jabbed into her back. Lee was above her. His hand clutched a tire iron. His face was white with rage. She tried to move, but her arms were pinned down, and all she could do was turn away, turn her head to see all the geckos, their stomachs bloated, breathing in and out, under the car, their beady eyes boring into her. "You'll die," they said. "You'll die." May woke, gasping, sitting up in bed. The room was hot. Raleigh didn't like to run the air conditioning at night. Next to her, he snored, his head hidden by a pillow. Outside, the stars twinkled in the black sky like 1,000 green eyes watching her. She bit her lip to keep from screaming out. One afternoon, she'd woken in the dim light of Lee's room to him trailing a thumb across her scalp, pressing into the soft spots. "My God," she said sleepily. "For a second, I forgot where I was. I thought you were Raleigh." He chuckled, but said nothing. "What are you doing?" "You're so delicate." He pressed his fingers around her neck then, squeezing slightly, so she sat up, sliding away from his touch, and turned on the light. "So very delicate. So easy to hurt." "You don't want to hurt me, though." "It's not about want," he said. She told him how, when she was a kid, flipping through her mother's fashion magazines, she felt like she could be something, that she was destined to make her mark on the world in some way. Then she met Raleigh. He'd been funny, charming. He'd like to throw around money, take her fancy places like the casinos and movies, buy her big necklaces and dripping earrings. And she'd been fooled into believing it would always be like that. "I just want more, you know," she told Lee, running her hand across his chest, imagining the roar of his car's engine. He'd shifted out from under her, stood up, and slid on his jeans. "You can spend your whole life wanting things, May, or you can just go out and take them." Go out and take them. It echoed in her ears there in the dark of Lee's room, where she waited. Back in her own apartment, Raleigh would be dead asleep, his snores bouncing off the walls. She could easily cross 3-4 state lines before he even woke to find her gone. And would he even miss her, she wondered? Would anyone? It seemed like hours before she heard something in the hall. It was a softness, a change in the air more than a sound. Then nothing. She held her breath, wondering if she'd just imagined it. Then the door opened. A silhouette slipped in. Lee flicked the light switch on by the door, but she'd already unplugged the lamp it had been connected to. She pulled the chain for the lamp on the table next to her. He looked wild, drawn tight. His hair had gotten longer and it curled around his ears like tentacles. He had days-old stubble and wore a black t-shirt she'd never seen before, adorned with a mechanics shop logo. Wherever he'd been staying, it probably hadn't had flower print canisters and fresh-and-fold linen services upon request. The animalness of him hit her. She had a ridiculous image of him foraging for food in the desert like a wolf. His eyes flicked on her, that flash of anger. Her eye socket popped right out. He could kill her now. In fact, he looked like he was about to, his arms drawn back, his breath wild, but he controlled it. Smiled. That smile that she remembered. And if she hadn't just seen that flash of anger in his eyes, she might have believed it. May pressed her finger firmly to her lips. "Shh," and pointed to the walls. Neighbors. Other tenants. May knew that there were no other tenants next door to Lee, but he didn't. She shifted slightly, moving the gun, twisting it, in fact, so that it pointed straight at him. Raleigh's hunting rifle. Lee's eyes locked on it, and he froze. She saw him reconsider, pause, calculate.
"Darlin'?"
"Lee." She smiled, calmly, she hoped, though her heart was slamming against her throat, nearly choking her.
"What's all this?"
He raised his hands, wiggling his fingers.
"This is my welcome home?"
I wasn't sure you were coming." He smiled at her, relaxed his shoulders.
"You told me to come get you, darling, so here I am. Come on now, put that down. Let's go."
"I just wanted to make sure. You told me to always be prepared, didn't you?" He chuckled, relaxing.
"That's my girl. I hear you have a present for me."
His eyes flickered around the room.
"Looking for jewels? Looking for cops?" She wasn't sure. She didn't care.
"I have all of it."
"Well, then let's go. Come on. We have to get out of here now."
May's eyes moistened with tears. "Is that what you told that girl too, Lee? That you'd take her with you?"
"Oh, darling, come on now. You're not jealous, are you? Is that what this is about?"
He laughed.
"She meant nothing to me, May. Not like you."
Lee moved toward her, but she lifted the gun, held it tight. He stopped.
"Don't come closer," she said, her voice wavering.
The tears were running now, but she didn't care. The gun was heavy in her hands, but she knew how to use it. She'd loaded it with Raleigh's bullets and asked the guy at the shooting range to teach her.
"Yes," she'd said when he recognized her. "Yes, my husband was afraid to tell you what had happened. Someone did break into our house, ransacked our place. I haven't been able to sleep since."
The man had been so eager to help her. He'd been so willing to help her learn to shoot not only Pamela, but the rifle, too. Good to know how to kill with different weapons.
"May, what is all this? Honestly. Over that stupid bitch? I thought you were smarter.
It has nothing to do with jealousy," she hissed at him, her anger boiling over. "You said it yourself. She meant nothing to you. She was just trash, something to use and throw away. Just like me, right? Do you think I'm stupid?" Lee's eyes narrowed. He gave a shout and lunged toward her. She closed her eyes and pulled the trigger. The sound was louder than she'd expected. No muffling from the headphones in the range. The world exploded in a giant burst of light, her ears stung, an echoing tunnel. Had she shot herself? The recoil vibrated through her arms and down her shoulders, settling somewhere in her belly. And then she could see again, see Lee's body on the floor, crumpled, his hands grasping at his belly. So much blood, all over the carpet, and she wondered how she'd ever find a cleaning woman who'd be able to get a stain like that out. She waited, counting slowly to 10, until Lee's wheezing stopped. Then she pulled out her cell phone and called Raleigh. It took him forever to answer, his voice groggy and slow, still sleeping off the drink.
"Raleigh, it's me. Oh, God. Raleigh, come here. It's room 312. He came back. He tried to kill me. Oh, Raleigh, I shot him. I think he's dead."
The police officer tapped her shoulder gently, but May still jumped, startled at the touch. He was holding out a steaming cup, and she took it. It wasn't good coffee, but it warmed her.
"I'm sorry, I don't have anything stronger," he said.
His bushy eyebrows turned inward and down, like the furry caterpillars she used to pluck from leaves as a kid. In the red and blue flashing lights, he almost looked kindly, though she still didn't trust him. She shivered, pulling the blanket the EMT had handed her tighter around her shoulders. She'd been living in the desert for over a decade, and still never got used to how cold it could turn in the night.
"Is there someone we can call?" he asked, turning toward her.
She shook her head. He sighed.
"Well, if you can think of anyone."
"Raleigh was all I had," she said, the sob escaping out the side of her mouth. The officer wasn't the comforting type, but if he had been, he might have given her a hug. Instead, he rubbed the edges of his mustache and shook his head. "If it's any solace at all, your husband died a hero. I mean, he took down the bad guy anyway, and probably saved a lot of other women's lives." He looked over at her. "Including yours." May flinched a bit, remembering the surprise in Raleigh's eyes just before it happened, just before Pamela had shown her power. "If only I'd gotten there in time," she said to the officer. He let out a little chuckle in pity. "If you had, ma'am, you might have gotten caught in their crossfire." Her eyes welled up with tears. "I was so stupid," May said. "I'm so sorry. I didn't know what I was getting into. You tried to warn me." She trailed off again, putting her head down, biting her hand. "He made me feel special."
"Don't they all?"
He patted her on the arm awkwardly, but she waited until he shifted away before she looked up again. Another officer called him over, and he left her alone. May walked away from the ambulances and cop cars to the edge of the parking lot. She looked up at the inn, a giant monster silhouetted against the desert night sky. It would be sad to leave this place. She'd grown fond of it over the years. But she'd need to start over, she supposed. That's what all this had been about, anyway. She could do so much more. Everyone had always underestimated her. Always. She was pretty sure they wouldn't do that anymore. The sale of the inn would hopefully cover all of the loans Raleigh took out on the place, but there wouldn't be much, if anything, left after that. It was okay. With the money in the flour, as well as the extra cash she'd taken from the safe over the past few weeks, she had enough to start with. And Ruby. She had Ruby. She slid her hand into her pocket, fingering the one small diamond she'd plucked from Lee's bag before setting it in his palm. No one would miss one diamond. Maybe one day she'd get a nice setting for it, a ring or a necklace. Until then, she'd keep Ruby as her secret, her promise for a new future. Her cousin would take her in for a while. She was confident she could get a job in another motel with all her experience, maybe as a front desk manager even, though she'd be fine just cleaning rooms. She wasn't fussy. She didn't need much.
The Long-Term Tenant is copyrighted by Tara Laskowski. Music for the podcast entitled Lost Highway was obtained from purpleplanet.com. Mixing for the podcast was done by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.ellerycreammysterymagazine.com.